is why the Democrats in Congress aren't standing up for us joining every other industrialized country in the face of the earth and having health insurance for every man, woman, and child in America.
When I worked for Howard Dean's campaign, using Meetup building software for people to connect and using listservs and an interactive blog, I thought we were changing politics forever in this country. This is a little crude, but I see three ascendant forces in the world these days: radical theocracy, multinational corporations, and civic democracy. I see Al-Qaeda and Harrow's Casino and Microsoft and the Ukraine. I believe whichever one of these forces can figure out how best to use the networking power of the internet, it will win. It will define the way we live in the world, the way we create meaning for ourselves for a few hundred years.
The ferment for the movement in 2000 was the discovery that our government is not as good as we thought it is.
Around the same time, I was working on the Dean campaign. Maidan.net, a Ukrainian website, was building a powerful citizen media network that would be part of changing their country forever. After a rigged runoff vote in the 2004 Ukrainian presidential elections, in November, millions of Ukrainians protested, holding sit-ins until the Supreme Court annulled the elections. In the second runoff, the Soviet-backed Viktor Yanukovych lost to the protesters' candidate, Viktor Yushchenko. Many of the protests were organized through Maidan.net.
We always wanted to be a resonator of socially important issues through the internet.
Andrei Inatov was one of the original Maidan founders.
To call people, for example, to come and have their...
He comes across as a mix between Tintin and a young Bartlesby, half intrepid explorer, half stubborn clerk. When I meet him, he has pale combed hair and wears a simple suit, his face constantly upturned, listening, practical.
Emails to media, to press...
Maidan was inspired by the use of the internet by a prominent Ukrainian journalist.
Georgi Gongadze was an internet investigative journalist. The traditional media was so tightly controlled and self-censored. So Georgi Gongadze pioneered, and his team pioneered, the internet investigative journalism. It turned out that his work outraged our government and the presidential administration, that he was kidnapped and killed in September 2000.
After the beheading of Gongadze, Andrei started helping out on Maidan. He has a matter-of-fact idealism about what they hoped to accomplish.
We sort of categorized what people can do on the website. Well, first of all, they can read the news. Second, and tell about them and give their opinions. Third, they can join a discussion on many online forums, thematical forums. Fourth, citizens can send their articles, their news reports to Maidan. Fifth, they can propose a petition, and we would post the petition on the website.
Using the standard Western metrics for internet penetration, it would seem that the internet would be something trivial. But the metrics don't take into account the powerful social role internet information can play, whether or not each person is directly online.
Many people do not have internet access at home, but they do at work, and they do on their cell phones through WAP service. So we have a Maidan version, WAP version of Maidan.
What I remember best about the revolution was the images and the chanting. The slogan that everyone was chanting on the street, it turns out, came from the message boards of Maidan.
The slogan that was the most popular slogan that was chanted on the streets was "Разом нас багато, нас не подолати." Which erupted occasionally to outside viewers. The fact is that the slogan was conceived by one of the very humble activists of Maidan, Anatoly Bondarenko. In my opinion, it illustrates the effects that the creative work of a small group of people resonated to a wider audience. Can make on the overall situation.
There There's something magical about the slogan, which in English means, "Together we are many, together we are many," coming from the message boards, bubbling up instead of being dreamed up in a boardroom of jaded campaign consultants. So many of the slogans of the Dean campaign, like "The tea is in the harbor" and "My vote is my voice, I will not be silenced," also came from our blog and our message boards. I like to think about people in different parts of the world creating their own meaning, finding each other online. Maiden has two full-time and two part-time staffers. When I ask Andre where Maiden is, he laughs.
It's based on the internet, like everywhere. So Maiden is 98% unpaid effort. It's just people love it, and this is it.
A few things strike me when Andre is talking. First, he just doesn't sound like an American campaign person, even the most idealistic. He never mentions list building. He doesn't measure his success in hits on the website. He doesn't start with the marketing framework. And he seems to break down the traditional divide between media and activism without even thinking. It's as if he doesn't see it.
So we would like to raise issues. We would like to inform about challenges and problems, local problems in other cities in Ukraine that traditional media don't pick up. There are many long-term projects. That's not related to democratization. That's related to humanitarian work. That's related to helping the poor, to health services, for example, improving health services.
When the election was finally over, the Ministry of the Interior and Maidan decided to work together on a project where Maidan visitors could publicly accuse police officers of corruption, which then allowed the ministry to investigate. People sent hundreds of reports.
Some of the reports were true, some were emotional or overly emotional, but the fact is that the Ministry of Interior allocated people, allocated the public servants to review the complaints, review the letters, and react.
The complaints were public, the responses were public. It's a kind of transparency that seems intuitive, but is unimaginable in our country. In the Ukraine, it happened. In the U.S., it didn't. Fundraising has changed, but as yet the basic power structures remain. It seems to me the question isn't whether the internet enables revolutions, but whether there is some sustainable way that localized, democratic forms can feed off the internet.
My name is Silvermaker, and I come from Estonia.
In Estonia, it looks like the geeks might have pulled it off. The government is proud that it's called E-Stonia and is constantly innovating new ways of using the internet in governance. So, does it work?
This year we had first nationwide e-voting, and this is first time in the world. So, these kind of ideas have made an image of this very small country.
Silvar is about the same age as Andre, late 20s, and he looks like a rock star with a striped suit and a red tie. And he moves his hands as if he's still smoking an imaginary cigarette. He's very aware of the disjoint between image and reality when it comes to internet revolutions, and when it comes to his own life. When he got married a few days before I met him, the local paper printed a picture of him and a radiant woman under the announcement of his marriage. Except it was an old archive photo of him and his ex-girlfriend.
There are different ways how internet can change society. The first thing is it can change the citizen way to communicate and to communicate with government and to use the public services. And I'm very sure that Estonia has developed in that sense very, very well. And there are very, very good examples.
Estonia, for example, has a national ID card and related website that maintains all the information you might need for checking on your doctor, finding a bus and buying a ticket, tracking your banking. It even had national internet voting in the last election. One of its most famous innovations is the use of a website called TOM, Today I Decide, which allows people to submit proposals for legislation. If over 51% of the people on the site like a proposal, it must be considered by the Estonian legislature.
The truth is it has never worked very well because of not so many people are interested in.
At this point, TOM is still more notion than democracy in action, but there are real innovations in basic services.
In Estonia, whenever you get a salary or whenever you sell a house and you get the money from there, or when you pay for your education, everything goes to the databases. So basically, when you have to make your income tax declaration, it takes you around 20 seconds or 40 seconds. It depends how quick is your broadband connection. It's not only just putting the form into internet and say, like, okay, print it out or send it by email, but it's actually changing the full process. Like, everything is there, and you have always a chance to check how much will be your retirement money and all these things.
I'm more than a little troubled by the idea of centralized data on a site housed by the government, and I asked Silvar what he thinks.
It's not so easy then to look at them, and in our database system, whenever some bureaucrat looks the information about me, for example, when it leaves a mark and I will see it, and I can always ask, why did you sneak my data?
That's how I feel right now with all the NSA spying and wiretaps. Bureaucrats, why do you sneak my data? Silvar became an MP almost by accident. In 2003, he ran and lost because he was inspired to speak during a rally. He was later appointed, and he became the kind of representative that we fantasized about during the Dean campaign, where the internet was a tool for connecting citizens.
When I became a member of parliament in 2003, I also used the internet to communicate with voters, and not only to send them information, but ask them to give me information, give me ideas, give me proposals.
Do you think the internet can be a tool for positive social democratic change?
I think in some way it's the last hope. Okay, when you talk about the situation, not only in Estonia, but, like, for example, the full democratic world, the participation in elections are going down everywhere. The interest in political life is also going down. And the trust for the parliament is low in UK, in Estonia. And the solution in some way that the political scientist has said is something like social capital. And one part of social capital is networks between the people. And internet gives a very easy, useful, quick, cheap tool for networks. Informal networks for people who are interested in whatever subject happening wherever in the world. And this actually can change something, and I really hope it does.
So do I. For the Berkman Center for Internet and Society, I'm Zephyr Teachout.